From Pacifico Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Now, the newest cause of the so-called collateral damage appears when technical precision is combined with human ambitions. As American air forces have improved their abilities to put bombs on target, the strategists have escalated their ambitions for war.
The ground war in Iraq has begun while millions of protesters around the world took to the streets to say no to war. In San Francisco alone, police arrested 1,500 people. We'll hear the voices of dissent from around the world, and we'll go live to Iraq to speak with students in Baghdad on the opening days of war. All that and more coming up. You are listening to Democracy Now!'s War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The ground war has started. Tens of thousands of U.S. and British ground forces are racing through southern Iraq in an attempt to seize the city of Basra and key oil installations. In the Faw Peninsula, U.S. Navy and British commandos have seized oil shipping and pumping facilities along the Persian Gulf. The Marine First Expeditionary Force is moving towards seizing control of Iraq's southern oil fields, where several wells were reported to be ablaze. U.S. and British troops recently seized strategically important airfields in western Iraq. A U.S. helicopter crashed early today just south of the Iraqi port of Umm Qasr. Four U.S. crew members and eight British Royal Marines were killed. The helicopter went down after encountering haze from a burning oil field. We have just learned that a member of the U.S. 1st Marine Expeditionary Force has been killed by Iraqi forces in southern Iraq. The Marine is the first American lost in combat. Meanwhile, U.S. forces killed at least 14 Iraqi soldiers in fierce fighting at key oil installations. The U.S. attacks from the air continue. Bombs rained down on Baghdad last night. Pentagon sources say in Baghdad, 24 Tomahawk missiles targeted strongholds of Iraq's elite presidential guard, as well as Iraqi President Saddam Hussein's main presidential palace and the offices of Deputy Prime Minister Tariq Aziz. The official Iraqi news agency said 37 civilians were wounded in the raid. It appears the U.S. military has yet to unleash the major air campaign they've dubbed Shock and Awe. War Secretary Donald Rumsfeld warned future attacks, quote, will be of a force and scope and scale that has been beyond what has been seen before. The Washington Post is reporting some U.S. officials believe the opening attacks yesterday struck a bunker where Saddam Hussein and one or two of his sons were sleeping. One administration official said evidence shows Saddam Hussein was at least injured in the attack or possibly killed. A source close to Saddam Hussein told the Washington Post the man who appeared on TV after the first attacks was not Saddam Hussein. Iraqi sources said the president is safe. And millions of people across the globe took to the streets yesterday to protest the U.S.-led war in Iraq. Over 1,300 people were arrested in San Francisco alone. In Italy, millions of union workers on strike. 500,000 protested in Germany. In Sydney, Australia, seen the second day of mass protests. We'll have more on this in just a few minutes. Despite the mass protests, the Senate yesterday voted 99-0. For a resolution that, quotes, commends and supports the efforts and leadership of the president as commander-in-chief in the conflict against Iraq. And early today, the House voted 392-11 to approve a resolution expressing even stronger praise for Bush. Fearing that U.S. forces will resort to using nuclear weapons in Iraq, senior Saudi officials have drawn up contingency plans on how to deal with a nuclear crisis. This according to the Washington Times. The plan, written in Arabic, concedes that the possibility of a U.S. nuclear strike is slight but possible. It lays out four scenarios in which American forces might resort to the nuclear option. If Iraq unleashes chemical or biological weapons on Allied forces, if Iraqi forces retreat to deeply buried bunkers, If the U.S.-led forces suffer unexpectedly heavy casualties or fierce resistance, or if Iraq unleashes a damaging barrage of Scud missiles against Israel. War Secretary Donald Rumsfeld is coming under criticism for exaggerating the size of the U.S. coalition backing war in Iraq. Yesterday, Rumsfeld told reporters, "The coalition in this activity is larger than the coalition that existed during the Gulf War in 91. But the Reuters news agency reports that facts put out by the administration itself suggests otherwise. In 1991, at least 33 countries sent forces to the campaign against Iraq, and 16 of those provided combat ground forces, including a large number of Arab countries. This year, the only fighting forces are from the United States, Britain, and Australia. U.S. officials have named 33 countries which support the U.S. invasion of Iraq, but this includes countries which are providing overflight and basing rights and which are giving only diplomatic or political support to the invasion. Turkey has delayed opening its airspace to U.S. aircraft because of disagreements over its military role in northern Iraq, this according to the BBC. The U.S. does not want Turkish forces to enter Iraq, fearing possible clashes with local Kurdish forces, but Turkey has already amassed 70,000 troops on the Turkish-Iraq border in order to seize portions of the Kurdish-controlled area. Over the years, the Turkish regime has killed thousands of Kurds and imprisoned many, including the Kurdish leader Leyla Zana, who was imprisoned for 17 years because, as a parliament member in the Turkish parliament, she spoke several words in Kurdish. Iran is shutting down its border with Iraq for at least 10 days, according to Iran's official news agency. On Sunday, Iran's government said it needed $15 million to meet the expected refugee crises arising from attacks on Iraq. Six men were charged yesterday with hijacking a Cuban airliner at knife point and diverting it to the Florida Keys. Investigators believe the hijackers took control of the plane without telling the 25 passengers and six crew members about their plans. And our quote of the week comes from NBC News anchor Tom Brokaw. He said on Wednesday night, "One of the things that we don't want to do is to destroy the infrastructure of Iraq, because in a few days, we're going to own that country."
War is not the answer, no, not today. War is not the answer, there's a better way. I don't believe the TV or the magazine. It's just the party line, propaganda machine. They're playing on our fears, but I won't be played. They're playing on our fears, but I'm not afraid. They tell me everybody's falling in line, everybody's bowing to the throne. Man. There
You are listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez.
And good day to all of our listeners and viewers around the country as we are in now past 36 hours of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. And it's amazing to me, after more than 6 months of a concerted campaign by the United States government to influence world opinion, we're still finding, Amy, in countries, Japan, 90% of the people, Mexico, 90%, Turkey, 90% of the populations opposed to this war. I think that the United States government has never been more isolated in the world in terms of an international action, and it would be hard to see that by watching our own corporate media here in America.
That's right. It is quite astounding to watch the media right now. Looking yesterday at the coverage, I was watching ABC last night, actually. I was watching Peter Jennings, and he did raise the issue of protests throughout the evening. But when it came to the commentators in the studios throughout the night, not one of those commentators, military analysts galore, but were people who were anywhere around the country or in the world from those pictures that they were showing, the pictures of protests, but someone calmly explaining why they were opposed to war. And the only comment from the street was, it was Chris Cuomo, the son of Governor Cuomo, reporter for ABC Now, who was out in the streets of New York where people had gathered thousands to protest war. And he said they're saying blood for oil, but they don't understand why. They're very confused. Never going to someone to bring them into the studio from the freezing rain and let them explain why it is not only they, but people around the world are opposed. We started discussing the media. We've been doing it for a long time. But yesterday on Democracy Now!, we were joined by Emmy Award-winning filmmaker John Alpert, who recently went to Baghdad to set up a dialogue between students in the United States and students in Baghdad. The documentary he has produced is called A Bridge to Baghdad. The goal was ambitious to set up this video meeting, but it turned out to be the least difficult part of this meeting. It's been finding an outlet in the United States to play the footage of kids talking to each other. That has been the difficulty. Today, we're going to play more of that footage, but we are joined by John Alpert in the studio and by students who are on the ground in Baghdad. Welcome, John.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, sorry if I'm going to disappoint the people listening and watching the show. We have no generals. We have no experts. What we have is we have real people in Iraq and real people in the United States. And this was what we tried to do. We wanted to have the young people in America talk to their counterparts in Iraq. It's part of a series, Chat the Planet, dialogues that we're going to be doing, trying to have people talk instead of fighting. So we have a sample of the tape. And we're going to try something. We've tried to locate the kids in Baghdad, the ones that are still there and the ones that are hopefully still alive. We're going to try to have the young people who participated in this dialogue talk to these kids in Baghdad today on the show.
We're going first to Baghdad.
First, we're going to go to the videotape that we recorded, that everybody participated in, the one that we've been having a lot of trouble getting on the air. I'm happy to say that we've worked real hard. We're going to get this on WorldLink. So if you subscribe to WorldLink, it's going to be on Sunday night, 6 o'clock
and
Eastern
Time.
DirecTV. Yeah. New York City, Channel 25. It's going to be on at 11 o'clock this Sunday night. You can contact us, dctvny.org. I think that's enough commercials. It's dctvny.org. But maybe... people can watch the tape, but if you want to order one of these things, we'll be happy to give you one.
Well, we're going to start with excerpts of that meeting, and then we're going to go live to Baghdad. This is an excerpt of A Bridge to Baghdad.
Today, we're participating in a historic discussion between the young people of two countries on the brink of war. We're building a bridge to Baghdad to open up this conversation. Let's everyone in New York say hi to everyone over in Baghdad.
Hi.
And if you guys could say hi back to us, just so we know that you saw us.
Yeah. Hi,
people of America.
I want to ask you, what are you doing when you woke up in the morning? First thing that you're doing when you wake up in the morning? I really like to know.
When I wake up in the morning, I eat a bagel, and then I you know, fix my hair and put on my clothes and whatnot.
Which barbershop you went to?
I go to Supercuts. I go as little as possible so to save as much money as possible.
I have another question. What is the most nasty thing that you ever done in your life? And I really like to know.
When I was dating one boy, I kissed another boy.
You're really a naughty girl.
Yeah.
What's the nastiest thing that you all in Iraq have ever done?
The nasty things in my life is that I'm eating too much so that I became so fat.
There's nothing wrong with that.
You agree with me because you are so fat.
Yeah. Some of you have things that you do, write poetry, write stories, music, to express yourselves?
I'm interested in computers and I like internet, I like email and all this stuff. And I think it's a good way to get away from problems and just stuck to the computer. I think it would help a little bit.
Here, school can be very expensive, especially when you go off to university. What is school like for you guys?
We've got free education here, so I think it's much easier for us, more than you guys down there. Although you're maybe more, you've got more facilities than us.
You guys are obviously very educated. I was wondering where you get your sources for American history and what stands out in your mind most about American history.
We are too interested in American movies. I think it shows your life, your normal life, ordinary life. Don't you think that it's a good source to know about you?
Movies often do not portray normal American life, to be honest with you. They're very romanticized. Sometimes they do portray our life, but I would say on the whole, they actually do not.
Who has a question for Suha? Alcy.
Are you allowed to date?
I had never had any date with anybody, with any guy. I'm telling the truth.
Where would you like to visit in the world, anywhere in the world, if you could go?
Really, I want to meet you. If you allow me to go to come there, I'm gonna meet you.
How are things resolved within the government when there are differences of opinion?
Can we like change the subject a bit? Do you like sports, any of you? Do you do anything? I mean,
I go dancing a lot. It's great on weekends. I dance to every type of music they play at the clubs. It's hip hop, reggae, rock, Spanish music, salsa, merengue, everything they play.
Here we've been seeing a lot of anti-war protests. People are pretty much allowed to say whatever they want. Are you guys afforded those same freedoms? Can you go out and demonstrate? Are you able to find a new leader if you wanted one?
We feel that this person really represents us, so we are supporting him, of course.
What do you think about the proposed alternative to war, which is a strengthened inspection process?
We have a solution. Your government will quit and give up because we don't have any biologic weapons and just turn the soldiers back home and have a rest and let the world be in peace.
How many of you feel hopeful that things could resolve themselves?
I don't think anybody is hopeful because President Bush went up and said, like, even if I stand against the whole world and nobody is with me, I will bomb Iraq. Do you think we have any hope?
And I think, you know, George Bush is trying to make a compelling case why to lead to war, because that's in some ways what he feels is the most reasonable solution. We have a lot of people here who completely disagree with that. So do you think young people can really make a difference?
Young people can do this. We don't want any more wars, okay? You are young, we are young, and we can help each other to stop this war. I think we can pass this hard time. Don't you agree with me?
I feel a little hopeful. I'm gonna try. I mean, I will try and organize peace demonstrations and rallies and everything I can to stop the war.
Especially as an Army veteran, I deeply, deeply appreciate the love of country that I've seen today. On top of that, stay safe and best of luck.
Iraq, if you could give us your final thoughts on the discussion that we had today.
It was a really, really good meeting. We are appreciating what you are doing for us, and maybe with some more cooperation, you know, with some more help, we're gonna pass through these difficulties. Thanks a lot and goodbye.
Let's rock and roll. You know, I love rock a lot. So, listen for some Metallica. It will help you, please.
Thank you for having me here, and I'm sorry if somebody, I said something wrong, but we don't have any offenses against American people. We love you guys, and we just want you with us.
Good night, Baghdad.
Bridge to Baghdad. Students talking across cultures, across continents, across the battlefield. You are listening to Democracy Now! John Alpert produced this intercontinental dialogue between students in Iraq and students in the United States, and we're now joined by two of the students on the phone right now from Baghdad. We're joined on the phone by Waleed Ghaffa, as well as Heba al-Sudani on the telephone, and in our studio, two New York students, Katrina Baker and Elsie Montas. We also tried to reach another of the students, Saif, who is one who said the greatest sin he'd committed was getting fat. But what happened, John? You were able to reach him yesterday.
Yeah, when we called him yesterday and we asked him how he was doing, he started to cry. And he said, I'm so scared. I guess he left town. I mean, a lot of the kids have left town. If they have relatives who have houses somewhere outside of Baghdad, it's a smart place to be outside of Baghdad right now.
And in your piece, when he takes you to his home, he introduces people to his little brother. And he said that his parents wanted him and his brother to go to Amman to be with friends, but that he didn't want to leave his parents, and so he stayed in Baghdad.
Right. He said that he'd just worry all the time. And he obviously was there during the beginning of the bombing, but I think what happened there, even though it's not the spectacular shock and all that everybody seems to be holding their breath for, it was scary enough, and he got out.
Waleed Ghaffa, you're with us in Baghdad?
Yeah, I'm with you.
It's good to have you with us. And Hiba, are you there as well?
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, Katrina and Elsie, would you like to continue your conversation with them?
It's good to hear your voices. I'm wondering what you're hearing down there. What's going on? What do you see?
Well, first of all, ladies, I just want to say salaam alaikum as the Iraqian greeting. And what we are doing is kind of horrible things, let's say, but it's not so serious till now, because they said that there is a lot of bombing, that till now there is no serious war, because in Baghdad, till now we didn't face any kind of strong damages, so we said it's fine till now, but I'm afraid that in the past, in the few days that's coming, that it's going to be a very horrible thing, because you know, the plan is, I guess, that if we think about this a little bit, that maybe they want to surprise us just to make sure that we won't struggle and we won't just turn. So, but let's say, I don't know. Well, it's a little bit complicated. I'm so confused because of that. You know, well, it's a hard times for us here in Iraq.
We have to.
What I don't know, but maybe if you ask Hiba or Muhammad, maybe they'll answer you better than me, because I'm not interested in TV and news, so maybe they heard the news better than me.
We have to break, and we're going to try to clear up the sound a little bit if we can. Waleed Ghaffa speaking to us on the phone, an Iraqi student in Baghdad. You're listening to Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute. Thank you. listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman, here with Juan Gonzalez. Katrina Baker and Alcy Montas are in our studio. On the phone with us in Baghdad, Walid Ghaffa and Heba al-Sudani. Do you have a question?
Heba, I'm wondering, I mean, here we're afraid for you. How are you feeling?
No, actually, I'm just hearing your voice. Could you repeat that question once again?
Sure. I mean, right here, we're afraid for you. My stomach's in knots. How are you feeling?
First of all,
if you could speak as loud as you can, Heba.
Sorry?
Speak as loud as you can, please.
Yeah, okay, okay. Actually, we're living a normal life here. We're not that afraid. And as I'm talking to you right now, we have kids outside playing. And everyone here is practicing in real life. I think there's nothing to worry about, except that sometimes the attacks going on here in Baghdad, like the attacks of yesterday, have caused 37 to be injured. So what we would be worried about is to be one of those soldiers one day. That's all we are worrying.
Well, last question, because we're having so much trouble understanding. But Alcy, would you like to ask a question?
Okay. It's great to hear from you guys again, and great to hear that you guys are doing all right. I just want you to know that we're with you out here, and we're for this whole peace movement. I just wanted to ask Walid, I know that you weren't sure if your father was okay. Did you hear anything from your father?
Well, till now, I didn't hear any news about my father, but I don't know. I'm so worried about him because, you know, he's in a very dangerous area. He's in a emotional meantime. So, I don't know. I have a terrible feeling that he might get something get wounded, but I pray for the Lord that he's okay till now. I don't know. I'm too worried about him.
And that is Walid Ghaffa. Where is your father?
Well, my father is in the north in Mosul.
He's in the army?
Yeah, he's in the army. I don't know, but it's maybe can't be the situation there. It can be worse than the meantime because I heard that they're gonna march from the north and from the south till they reach the bottom. While we are marching through Baghdad, I think that they're going to destroy the whole army. But I don't know. I don't know what can I say about this. But it's a horrible feeling, you know, when you think that your father is in danger and you can't do anything and just sit and waiting for a phone call or something. It's a horrible thing.
Walid, we're all rooting for you that nobody gets hurt, that your father gets through this, that everybody's family and friends, all the kids that we've met, get through this unharmed. It's kind of tough to hear their voices over there, isn't it? I mean, the quality's not that good, but you can hear the fear in Walid's voice. He's a tough kid, and for him to say that he's scared means he's really scared.
Walid Ghaffa in Baghdad. Heba al-Sudani in Baghdad, Katrina Baker and Alcy Montas here at our studios in DC TV, downtown community television in the heart of Chinatown, just blocks from the first Ground Zero.
Right. So, folks, if you want to watch this, please tune into WorldLink on Monday night, 6 o'clock Eastern Time, or if you're in New York City on Sunday, Channel 25, or if you want to copy the tape. It's good to show in classes and things like that. Kids talking, I think it could really be useful. DCTVNY.org.
I want to thank you very much for being with us. And I don't know if they are still on the line, but maybe what we play next might be heartening to them. And it is young people and older people around the world who are speaking out against war. Some people called in yesterday and talked about what they were doing.
Hi, this is Scott Plunkett. We're calling from Santa Fe, New Mexico. There's about 250 people here. It started at the plaza here at noon. There's signs all over the place. God bless the whole world. Choose peace. A million mothers for peace. We just staged a die-in here, and that's my son who is crying at my feet. 30 students were suspended for walking out at the Santa Fe High School. More like 70, I'm hearing.
My name is Roxanne Ortega, and I'm calling from Santa Fe, and I'm a student at Santa Fe High. And today we did a candlelight vigil in like our main like area at our school, and we're like our administrators threatened that we should either go to class or get suspended for like 5 days, and we all just sat there, and so they got all our names, and everybody that was sitting there got suspended, but we only got suspended for the rest of today and tomorrow.
Hi, my name is Mia Benito, and I go to Santa Fe High. I also attended the vigil today and was suspended. I attended the rally last week at Santa Fe High, where 3 kids were arrested, I being one of them. All the kids were really harassed by the cops and dragged off and brutalized, but we were let go.
My name is Lauren Poole. I participated in the sit-in today, and a lot of us were upset by the fact that fellow students that were also trying to participate in the sit-in were stopped on their way to protest with us and threatened with 10-day suspensions if they participated, completely uncalled for. And but we did the sit-in anyway, and it went well, and our head principal congratulated us on our just the way we went through with it, and we're very peaceful the whole time and silent.
Hello, my name is John Heiss. I'm a veteran of the Vietnam War, a disabled veteran. I'm here in support of the cause of stopping this war, this insanity, this bloodletting that need not be. You know, we need to have some sanity in this world. We have a butcher and a horrible people running this government. We have no choice but to protest and try to stop this war. This war has to stop.
Yes, this is Denise Martinez, and I am reporting from Vancouver, British Columbia in Canada, where I am out just outside the U.S. consulate on Thurlow and Hastings here in downtown Vancouver. And I'm outside where a long-standing vigil has been occurring since Friday. People have weathered the rain to protest the U.S.'s invasion of Iraq. And just right now, about 300 people from Vancouverians, Canadians, have assembled to continue the long-standing protest, which will be occurring, I'm sure, throughout the week, to protest this massacre, this onslaught of innocent lives. People are holding up signs such as Honk for Peace, which you can hear right now is just occurring. The Canadian Mounties are assembled here. Everything's fairly peaceful, but it's very vocal. You have your local and national media entities which are covering this event, which is what I'm getting from the States is not has not been happening in the States so much. People in wheelchairs are here. They are covering, you know, all walks of life, all ethnicities, and they're saying no to what this massacre that the U.S. is committing.
This is Pat Wheeler from Deer Isle, and I'm with a group in Bangor today at the federal building. The police just went in. The people are going to be arrested. We had an appointment with Senator Collins, and the security in the building would not let us up into her office as a group. There are 14 of us. They would let 3 up, and we said we chose to not do that. The 14 of us wanted to stay together, and so her representative came down, and we had to read the statement in the lobby of the office. And we are making the statement that we feel that our senator is complicit with the Bush administration, and that we hold her accountable. And until she changes her views and objects to the war, they will stay in the building. And so the police have gone in to arrest them. They wanted to go down on record as saying that we will not be complicit in this war, that before Hitler's rise to power, that everyone asks, where were the German people? We don't want that to happen to us. We are here, and we are objecting, and that's what we're here to say, and that's what they're getting arrested for right now. And there are cameras waiting here to film them as they come out. And that, I guess that's all I have to say.
Hi, this is Sarah Harris. I'm an independent radio journalist in Los Angeles, and I'm here in front of the federal building where there are about 3,000 people out protesting, if not more, and there are certainly at least 400 LAPD and California State Troopers. We were crossing the street and sitting down to stop traffic, and policemen started coming at people with billy clubs, and they hit a little old man in front of me, so I stopped to help him, at which point they started pulling my reporter away from me and my camera. They shoved me on the ground. They kicked me. And I even spoke to them in Spanish because I'm Chicana. And I said, how dare you do this to your own people? And, well, there are still about 3,000 people here and 8 o'clock.
Just some of the voices that have been out on the streets and are now calling in. And if you'd like to let us know what you're doing in this time of war, you can call 212-209-2999. That's 212-209-2999. 107 people were arrested for blocking the federal courthouse in Philadelphia.
Thousands of demonstrators snarled traffic along Chicago's main arteries, breaking through lines of police on horseback.
Student protesters at University of California, Berkeley occupied the main administration building for more than 2 hours. 120 students were arrested.
During rush hour in New York City, demonstrators pushed past police barricades in Times Square, halting traffic on Broadway for 2 hours.
Also in New York, September 11th, Families for Peaceful Tomorrows marched against a war they said was unjustified and illegal.
100 demonstrators shut down a major bridge connecting Virginia to Washington, D.C.'s Georgetown neighborhood.
Protests were also reported in dozens of cities, as we've heard, throughout the nation, including Seattle, Portland, Houston, and Pittsburgh, among others.
U.S.-based anti-war groups like United for Peace and Justice, International Answer, and Stop the War Coalition in Britain are planning large demonstrations in New York and London on Saturday.
The U.S. has closed several of its consulates in Australia, including the one in Sydney, as a second day of anti-war protests gets underway there. 25,000 people have taken to the streets in Melbourne outside the Victorian State Trades Hall. Thousands of people are now in the drenching rain, hearing anti-war messages from union leaders, Gulf War veterans, local celebrities. In Melbourne, activists chanted, U.S., please explain, why did you install Hussein? While in Sydney, there are reports of rowdy demonstrations and clashes with police. Australia's contributed more than 2,000 troops to the U.S.-led coalition.
Protests in Athens and Cairo attracted between 150,000 and 200,000 people. There are reports of violent crackdowns against protesters gathered outside the U.S. embassy in Cairo.
More than 250,000 people in Germany marched against the war. In Berlin alone, more than 50,000 students walked out of their classrooms during a peaceful march to the U.S. embassy there.
Thousands of French students also left their classrooms to march through Paris, where 60,000 protesters gathered in the Place de la Concorde for a peace rally.
Tens of thousands of protesters in Rome participated in a torchlight march to the Colosseum. Similar protests were reported in Milan, Turin, and Palermo.
Students and school children gathered outside the House of Commons in London. Demonstrators there went into the night.
And in Spain, anti-war protesters handed Parliament a petition signed by 1.2 million people denouncing the U.S.-led attack.
And 13 U.S. embassies and consulates were shut down due to security concerns, and others throughout the world were on heightened alert.
Clashes were reported between police and demonstrators in Ankara, Turkey, and Damascus, Syria, where several hundred protesters tried to storm the U.S. embassy.
Belgian police used water cannon to repel hundreds of angry stone-throwing protesters outside the U.S. embassy in Brussels.
At least 1,000 student protesters in Amman defied government edicts prohibiting anti-Western protests in Jordan.
And riot police charged a crowd of several hundred in Warsaw, arresting 30 people.
Demonstrations were also held in Vienna, in New Delhi, and the Moroccan capital of Rabat. We're going to turn back right here to the United States, where one of the protests with the largest number of arrests took place, and that was in San Francisco. Prothap Chatterjee, independent reporter, joins us. Welcome, Prothap.
Thank you, Amy.
You were outside yesterday. How many people were arrested in San Francisco?
The police total so far is 1,500 people, of whom at 11 p.m. 1,000 people were still in jail. And so that sort of gives you the scale of the protests. I mean, we're talking probably at least 5,000 people. It was really hard to estimate the number because people were scattered all over the city, and it was, as one of the protest organizers described it, shock and awe tactics, which certainly shocked and awed both the police as well as people in downtown, many of whom were very supportive. And in fact, the police were largely peaceful, although there were occasional scuffles with protesters. So it was really a beautiful sight to see when people started out at 7 a.m. There were maybe 200 people just in Herman Plaza, which is right by the waterfront. And then they took maps and they fanned out across the city. And at any given point, you could see, an intersection, and six people would walk into the intersection, start singing, form a circle. And then as people learnt of it, they would rush over and gather around and lock down. And then all of a sudden, traffic was disrupted. People had to be rerouted. And by the time the police arrived, people melted away and went to the next intersection. And in that way, they shut down something like 40 intersections all the way from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. And the assistant fire chief described it as absolute anarchy. The mayor estimated the cost to the city was over $500,000. Really, the police were struggling to keep up. They had helicopters buzzing overhead all day, trying to pinpoint protests and send squads of motorcycle cops to try and intercept the next protest. But it became very hard. And on at least four occasions, hundreds of protesters tried to storm the freeway, the Bay Bridge, the ramps onto the Bay Bridge. And although they were unsuccessful, they managed to severely disrupt traffic during the afternoon rush hour. It was really, Amy, something what I would describe as a combination of the spirit of Seattle and critical mass, in the sense of people using tactics of affinity groups to lock down intersections, but also where in Seattle during the WTO protest, people locked down the one building in one area. Here, it was a much larger area, and the way that was possible was basically because people used critical mass tactics. Indeed, there were a number of bicycle activists, so they could move swiftly from point to point. And a lot of affinity groups, including Freedom Uprising, the People of Color Coalition.
If I can just interrupt you for 1 second. You said that the protest lasted throughout the day from 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.?
To 11 p.m., and it's starting again in about 20 minutes, and I'm heading over there.
Well, Prothap, before you do, we received this disturbing call as well yesterday.
I'm calling from Sonoma County, and my name is Karen Collins. I'm a mother of four. We turned the radio on this morning so we could tune in to see what was going on, and the kids adjusted the radio to the dial for a station called Alice in San Francisco. I'm not a listener, and I'm not sure of what their politics are, but I was quite upset about what they were saying this morning. Just within the couple sentences of just listening in, the host suggested the whole show seemed directed at inciting anger towards the protesters. The host, Sarah, suggested that if you didn't like the protesters, that you step on your gas pedal and lay into your horn and basically drive into them, and if they were smart, they would get out of the way. And I can't really phrase it as well as she did, because it was very irresponsible and quite upsetting. I decided that I would call the radio station. It took me a little while to get in, but I didn't realize I would be live on the air. Went live on the air, told them that I felt very upset about this, that there were a lot of credible people out there protesting, doctors, vets, mothers, fathers. It's not all radical people, as they were trying to portray on the radio, unemployed, weirdos, and that was dangerous to encourage people to run down the protesters, and that there were a lot of instability in our country right now, and I would pray that no one would try to run the protesters down, because they're just exercising their right of expression. And within minutes of getting, and I told them, too, that if anyone were to get hurt, I hope they lose their jobs, because this is just serious. It's not funny. And within seconds after getting off the phone, I went into the kitchen where the radio station was still playing, and someone ran through the duct tape where the protesters had taped off the streets, and I believe it was right near, if not right in front of the radio station, and drove into the crowd. The guy that was from the radio station that was out there kind of accosting people and pretty much making fun of protesters said, "Oh, my God, someone's been hit by a car," which was met by a few moments of silence on the radio. And then they said, "Well, go see if she's okay." Well, it turns out she didn't actually get hit by the car, but was pushed down and everyone struggled to get away from the vehicle. But it wasn't just a few more sentences that they were back with their regular dialogue. And it was just quite upsetting that they would try to incite people that way and even make those suggestions more than once on the radio when they were bragging about their listenership of being over 40,000 people. I decided to call. Just following my conversation with them, what they were saying on the radio when I went in there, they were laughing at me and they were joking about losing their jobs, and they didn't take it seriously. And it just was so upsetting because, you know, our whole country's in a crisis, and there are a lot of unstable people who do take things like that quite seriously. With that kind of listenership, it's very irresponsible. I have their number. It's 1-800-400-3697. And that's the, you get right through to the studio with that. But if you want to call the business office, it's 415-765-4097.
And that was Karen Collins, a listener calling in. Prothap Chatterjee, as you head off to the protest today, your final comment.
Well, Sarah, No Name Show, unfortunately, is pretty popular. A lot of people listen to it. It's not representative of the general view of people. Gopal Danani of Direct Action to Stop the War said that even the federal marshals who took him in were sympathetic and said that they were, one of them told him he was a Vietnam War vet and he, actually a Gulf War vet and had Gulf War syndrome, and they agreed with his opinion. So there's always going to be the occasional person who, you know, follows this kind of thing. I want to repeat that number for people, 1-800-400, I think it was 3697. People should call in because a lot of people listen to that show and express their opinions. And they actually, you know, they get their funding particularly from mattress discounters and a diamond merchant. They don't really, and they spend a lot, most of their time making fun of people. So I'm not surprised that Alice Radio does that.
Well, Prothap Chatterjee, thanks for joining us. We'll continue to report on the protests that are happening in San Francisco and around the world. And we just got this news that a 11-year-old Yemeni child in Sana'a, Yemen, was just killed as police clashed with anti-war protesters in the streets of the Yemeni capital. You're listening to Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute.
Two autumns and I haven't changed enough. It's September 12th and the sky has fallen, the sun has risen. A city built in five dimensions undergone circumcision. 8 days under Judaic law. Dear diary, I'm fiery, divine wind's my friend. Took me back to the beginning when I swore it was the end. From the fiery depths, found the ocean within. My penmanship seals it straight through my lips. I'm hip to your games, hip to the science of war. Propaganda make me fight, but what am I fighting for? My way of life, beans and rice, give or take less or more. See through the eyes of the poor, plus I'm black to the core. Ignorance is on tour, booking stadiums and more. The days of Hitler painting pictures patriotic with gore. You raise a flag on a land, snatch a bald eagle's claw, and stamp the symbol on your currency to finance your war. I'm saying no, not in my name, not in my life, not by my hands, that ain't my fight, not in my name.
You wage a war against terrorists and violence and try to wave your guns of fear and sword in the silence.
I'm saying no, not in my name, not in my life, not by my hands, that ain't my fight, not in my name.
You built your empire with natives and slaves.
Saul Williams, Not in My Name, here on Democracy Now! The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Even if you've been watching news 24 hours a day, you may have missed a major story. Within an hour of the start of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, U.S. forces also launched the largest attack in Afghanistan in over a year. Pentagon says U.S. forces have begun a massive new assault on caves and potential hideouts in the mountains of southern Afghanistan. The attack was focused in the Maruf district of Kandahar province. Well, about an hour ago, I had a chance to speak with Afghan-American Masuda Sultan. She usually lives in New York. She went back to Afghanistan, and one of the things she's been doing is trying to find out what happened to 19 members of her family, why they were bombed by U.S. forces last year. She talked about her trip and what is happening in the, quote, new Afghanistan. She's in Kandahar.
I am here in Kandahar City. So that the purpose of my trip is to plan a conference this coming fall around the issue of the Constitution and to gather women from different parts of the country together here in Kandahar to get their feedback heard on the Constitution, issues of their rights, and also to see how they feel about elections and how they can be a part of that process. It's very interesting here. I was at the conference that V-Day had sponsored in Kabul. Women had come from different parts of the country, and one of the things that they cited as an important, as a priority, was disarmament. Disarmament of the warlords and people all over the country. And when we got back to Kandahar to work with the women here on that issue, we were supposed to work on a petition. We ran into a pretty interesting problem, which was that they were afraid to put their names next to something that would then cause them, Gulaga, the local warlord, to either come after them or harass them. Women here know what needs to be done. Disarmament is a key issue, and yet they're afraid of the backlash against them and their families. So essentially, their voices are not being heard, and they can't speak out because of fear. And the Gulaga has a militia here in Kandahar. They're outfitted by American forces here on the base in Kandahar. They're wearing what I'm told is American-style uniforms, and I've seen them. So it's just interesting. We're supposed to have a police force here. We also have a section of the army that is linked to the National Army. But again, it's classic throughout the country. Others have their own armies.
Masuda, can you tell us where you're headed tomorrow?
Tomorrow we are going to be traveling to Chaukar Karez, which is the village where my family was that night that the U.S. forces attacked. It was October of 2001, the end of October. About 25 people in the village were killed. 19 of them were my relatives. We're going to go visit the village and see if any of it has been rebuilt and to see if we can help in the rebuilding process.
Have you ever found out why the U.S. military bombed your family in the farmhouse and why 19 of them died?
Well, I haven't gotten any answers beyond what you and your listeners had heard from when we visited the base, and they told me to go to DOD in the U.S., and that I pursued. It pretty much looks like the Pentagon says one thing, which is it was a legitimate target, and all the villagers say another thing, which is no Taliban, no Al-Qaeda, and in fact, we were being oppressed by those forces.
Masuda Sultan, she is an Afghan-American, usually lives in New York, is speaking to us from Kandahar, where the largest U.S. assault in more than a year is now taking place, even as the bombs are dropping on Baghdad. You are listening to Democracy Now!, Jeremy Scahill again joining us, Democracy Now! Correspondent who's just returned from Baghdad, who has the cover story of The Nation that's come out today. It's called Inside Baghdad. Casualties, Jeremy, and how people are preparing.
Yeah, I mean, the story is essentially talking about the nature of fears that ordinary Iraqis have been expressing over the past several weeks. Actually, one of the things that this crisis has done is to really bring a very vibrant political debate in Iraq to the surface. People, you know, you oftentimes hear journalists and other people characterize the fear of Iraqis in talking particularly about the government and their views on the government. But what I noticed in the last couple of weeks in particular when I was in Iraq is that people were talking very openly at times about what they think of Saddam Hussein. In fact, one day I walked out of my hotel and a taxi driver was standing there polishing a car that was not his own. And I said, oh, is that a new car? And he said, no, I'm going to get my new car after the war. I'm going to take a Mercedes from Saddam Hussein's palace. And he said it in English and he said it loud. And then he laughed, you know, and I was also approached by people who, one old man came up to me and he said, you know, we live our lives like we have razor blades caught in our throat. If we just keep it there without moving it, we can continue to live. But if we pull it out, we die. If we push it down, we die. And this is our life. And I think that one of the things that is clear is that people have suffered in an unprecedented manner. And Washington has pounded their heads with this idea that if Saddam Hussein is gone, it all is going to end. And I think that a lot of people are starting to believe that. And even though it's humiliating, people are saying at any price we'll just take an end to it. We can no longer be the crucifix of the world.
You also mentioned in your article the because the Iraqis have now been through so many wars that they've got sort of ordinary Iraqis have a different attitude, let's say, than Americans would or other people would. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, the the Iraqis have been at war for more than 20 years. You had the Iran-Iraq war and now the Gulf War. I had one guy said to me that with wars, I'm like Sylvester Stallone. I'm like Rocky. You know, we've had too many sequels and we don't need another. And people, they know, I mean, Iraqis know what it means to suffer from warfare. You see people who are missing fingers, many widows throughout Iraq. One woman who I know very well, who's from Basra, her husband is just lost his mind, and also he's physically disabled, and he was 20 years in the Iraqi army. And we were talking, I had just been in Tikrit, and I say, which is the birthplace of Saddam Hussein. And we were talking about how the prices at the grocery store in Tikrit, Saddam Hussein's birth town, are the same as they were before the Gulf War, when the dollar when 3 1/3 dollars equaled 1 Iraqi dinar, and now it's 2,000 plus dinars to the dollar, and the prices are the same. So you can get a chicken for 1 dinar. I mean, it's nothing. And we were talking about this, and she started crying, and she said, "What have these people done for this country? My husband was 20 years in the army. He lost his mind. He lost his body, and he beats me. What have these people done for Iraq?" And you hear stories like that all the time. And I think, some of the people that I've known for 5 years, I've seen a change in their attitude. Their primary reason that they would cite for their suffering was always sanctions, and always the U.S. administration and U.S. policy. But more and more people are saying, he's making billions off of oil smuggling, and we don't have sewage system in our city. He's making billions, and his sons and his friends run around on Adasat Street in Baghdad and go to expensive restaurants and drink French wine, and they buy Cuban cigars and they drink vodka. And look at us, look at how we live. We don't believe that our suffering is only because of America. And they're right. I mean, they're right. They're pinned between a superpower and a tyrant.
And Jeremy, as you now come back to the United States and you watch the news coverage of the embedded reporters, or they say, as they identify themselves, the reporters in bed with the Marines or embedded with, that's how they say it. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, CNN, I think, is very interesting on the, they don't even identify their embedded, quote unquote, reporters as being reporters. They just say so-and-so from the 51st Airborne Division. They just say so-and-so 51st Airborne Division. And, particularly on Fox and unfortunately also on CNN, it's very difficult to tell, is this a spokesperson for that division or a reporter? And it's also difficult with the Pentagon correspondents. Are we watching a Pentagon briefing or a reporter talking about a Pentagon briefing? Because the line has totally disappeared with this war.
And interestingly, the when you compare the situation during the first Gulf War, when basically the press had no access, and then there was enormous pressure on the Pentagon. Now the Pentagon has gone in the complete opposite, from no access. Now they've incorporated the press into the actual invasion in a way that is astounding in terms of its seamlessness.
Right, and in Baghdad, they always say our reporters' reports are being monitored and censored, etc. But they don't say that with the embedded reporters. And if they want to be intellectually honest, they should say all of our reports are being monitored by the Pentagon. The Pentagon has set rules; we've agreed to follow them because we're unquestioning patriots.
Well, Jeremy, I want to thank you for being with us and for being our unembedded reporter in Baghdad. That does it for the program. If you'd like to get a video or audio cassette copy, you can call 1-800-881-2359, 1-800-881-2359. Democracy Now! Is produced by Chris Abrams, Mike Burke, Angie Karen, Anna Noguera, Elizabeth Press, and Noah. Mike DeFilippo is our engineer. Our email address is mail@democracynow.org. Our website, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for listening.
The old people hide. The babies are caught in the rebel debris. But the strangers don't know.